According to my memory, it took almost 11 more years for the weight of the problem to provoke in me a commensurate sadness. And even then, it lasted only for about 20 minutes. It was fall 2009, a month before my 19th birthday. My father was in Antarctica, and I'd come home from college to spend a long weekend with my mother. I remember the clocks had just been set back, and the early nightfall still felt abrupt and unfamiliar. We decided to watch a movie, and, knowing nothing about it, I suggested Lars von Trier's Melancholia, which I'd been assigned to watch anyway for a class. My mother propped the laptop on her knees, and we sat up against her headboard staring at its screen. In the movie, Kirsten Dunst plays a woman suffering from melancholic depression, and Charlotte Gainsbourg plays her sister. The plot revolves around the sudden appearance of a new planet in the sky, which scientists have dubbed Melancholia. Gainsbourg is confident, in line with the prevailing wisdom, that Melancholia will pass close to Earth and then shoot past it. Dunst is convinced it will make direct impact, killing everyone. On the day of the projected flyby, the family gathers on the terrace to watch the spectacle. The planet floats like a sightless face, a huge pale mask over the grounds of their palatial home. Gainsbourg's young son twists a green twig into a circle, which they use to track the planet's progress across the sky. As Melancholia flies past Earth, Gainsbourg watches it grow smaller and smaller in the rudimentary frame, receding into space. She is giddy with relief, though Dunst is listless as a prop, hardly responding to the news. The next morning, Gainsbourg places the twig to her eye once more and is shocked to see that the planet appears to have grown larger. In a panic, she places the circle to her eye again and again, but the result doesn't change. In the pull of Earth's gravitational field, Melancholia has circled back and is headed straight for them. In the last scene, Gainsbourg, her son, and Dunst share a final meal together. Above them, Melancholia has replaced the sky itself, its cratered surface obscuring all the blue. For the first time in the movie, Dunst is calm. There is a new life to her gestures, as if Melancholia has brought something inside of her into alignment. Dunst tells her nephew not to worry, that they can escape the collision by hiding in a magic cave. Grabbing her sister too, she leads them to the top of a small hill and constructs a fragile teepee from broken branches, insisting they all sit inside. As the planet gets nearer, each of them adopts a pose. Gainsbourg is bent double and sobbing. Her son has closed his eyes, trusting in the cave. And Dunst sits cross-legged, watching them both, a new sense of peace straightening her back and relaxing her shoulders. Then Melancholia makes impact, destroying the entire world. When the movie ended, we watched the credits scroll across the screen, neither of us making a move to break the spell. I could feel the heat from the bottom of the laptop, the beleaguered whir of its little fan. Then all of a sudden I was sobbing, really sobbing, like the sobs were gripping my arms and shaking me hard enough to dislodge tears. It was so sudden that at first I didn't know what was happening, and so couldn't explain to my mother that the movie had finally induced the kind of feeling I'd always assumed was latent in my understanding of the problem. This fathomless realization that the world I knew could end, might end, was perhaps in the process of ending. The feeling reminded me of certain dreams I'd had. In these dreams, I would plunge into a body of water and realize I was sinking. Casually at first, and then with increasing urgency, I would thrash my limbs around, trying my hardest to swim. But no matter how hard I kicked, the surface would continue to recede, and the water would grow blacker and blacker. Eventually it would occur to me that I'd exhausted all my options, and that I was soon going to drown. I would feel my mind wrapping its arms around this fact, trying to press it into an alternative formation, squeeze from it some last trickle of hope. And when this failed, the gates of my mouth would open, and resignation would come flooding in with the water. A sudden slackening of the muscles, a last-minute shuffling of priorities, the bounds of my foresight snapping back to within arm's reach. Then I would wake up suddenly and, without moving, stare into the darkness above my face, trying and failing to retain this feeling that was so elusive in waking life. The feeling that I could die was in fact going to die. But like with those dreams, the feeling induced by Melancholia quickly dissolved. I stopped crying and got up without explanation, assuring my mother that everything was fine.